Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, busy man, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films I Love My Dad, Tin Can, and He Dreams of Giants. Music up. Dr. Sterrett.
Even you could not make
a short story,
I think, out of those titles. They are very different from one another. And the movies are, they could not be more different from one another. And that's part of the fun. Movies offer a lot of variety in this world. Well, not enough variety, because so many movies are just the same as all other movies. But these three at least come from very different genres or formats. Anyway, let us begin with I Love My Dad. This is a movie which is written and directed by James Morosini, who also plays one of the two main characters, the younger one of the main characters. The older one of the main characters, the dad of the title, is played by Patton Oswalt. Patton Oswalt is a talented comedian. He does good comic performances. He knows what he's doing. He's fun to watch. I wish I could say the same for this movie. Here's what this movie is about. It is about a young man who is very troubled. He recently attempted suicide. He lives with his mother, who is very, very worried about him. And one of the sources of his troubles, apparently, is his father, who is just a very dodgy character. He's a lovable guy, but he is somebody who lies all the time and who cheats at things. One of the things he does as a hobby is to play chess over the internet, and he cheats at that by using a computer game and a real-life game. He's a liar and a cheat, although, again, a lovable one, but he has evidently caused psychological problems, or at least contributed to psychological problems, of his son, whose name is Franklin. So the dad, whose name is Chuck, really would like to get back on good terms with his son, Franklin. Franklin has cut him off completely, won't let him access his internet sites, won't talk to him on the phone or anything else. So what is poor Chuck, the father, going to do about all this? Well, he hits upon a very, very, again, shady, dodgy, ridiculous sort of scheme. He sets up a fake Facebook account, a fake Facebook account, and then gets in touch with his son Franklin through this Facebook account, in order to establish contact with him and find out what he's doing and that sort of thing. The thing is, he sets up the Facebook account using the name and picture and information of a young server who he just met at a local sort of diner. So there you have it. Here's the father trying to reestablish contact with his son through a Facebook account, which is totally bogus, which he sets up using the face and image of a server who he just met and doesn't even know. So this leads to all kind of complications. And little by little, yes, the father, Chuck, does succeed in getting back in touch with the son, Franklin. But of course, the whole thing is based on this bogus Facebook account. And ultimately, of course, all this comes to light. Now, I Love My Dad is what's sometimes called a comedy of embarrassment. It is a comedy, but it is full of people in incredibly awkward situations that invite us in the audience to feel all the awkwardness and to cringe, sometimes along with the characters, sometimes in spite of the characters. And this is just not my favorite kind of comedy. I don't really like it all that much. So again, Patton Oswalt does a fine job, and if you're a fan of Patton Oswalt, you will probably love I Love My Dad. And James Morosini gives a very nice performance in that secondary role. And Claudia Slewski gives a good performance as Becca. The acting in this movie, who is the server, it is a well-acted and capable put-together movie. But oh my gosh, I just found it so cringe-inducing and ultimately sentimental and embarrassing. And I hate to say it, but I just can't resist it. I Love My Dad. I hate this movie. Okay, onward to something completely different. Let's move to the world world of science fiction and horror for the movie called Tin Can. This is a movie which is directed by and co-written by Seth A. Smith, and it is a Canadian movie. And perhaps partly for that reason, it really often reminded me of David Cronenberg's films, partly because Tin Can very much delves into David Cronenberg's specialty, which is body horror. But Tin Can is more science fictional and a little bit less horror movie than a lot of David Cronenberg's movie, but it's basically a blend of both. So here's the setup for Tin Can. We have a young woman who wakes up in, it's almost a tin can. It is a very confined little prison-like space. It's almost like a cocoon, a metal cocoon that she's in. Her name, by the way, is Fret, and she is played very well by Anna Hopkins. So here it is. She wakes up in this little confined space. We've already gotten a glimpse of her outside this, working in some sort of research institute. And little by little, the threads of the movie come together. It turns out that a plague has been sweeping across part of Canada, and she has been working at an institute which is trying to find a vaccine or some sort of measure to counteract this plague. Yes, this is all very, very redolent of the coronavirus pandemic, and the movie was obviously made under those circumstances and had that sort of thing in mind. So now, here she was working on some sort of a countermeasure to combat this horrible plague, and she was actually assaulted, hit over the head or something with a metal rod, and now she finds herself in this tin can-like prison space. Well, little by little, she learns that there are people in other similar tin can-like prison spaces around her, here and there, and she starts talking with them, calling out to them. They call out to her. They start communicating. They are just as much literally in the dark as she is. Nobody knows why they are in these spaces, who put them there, or what is going on. She soon discovers, as others have discovered, that you can push out the little vent in your tin can and thereby get a little bit of a glimpse of the outside world, but you see very, very little. And what you see is often not reassuring. There are these huge lumbering figures. They're either people in incredibly confining hazmat suits, or maybe they are robots who are lumbering about and doing various mysterious things, and the movie proceeds from there. So this is the kind of film, and there have certainly been others. There was a movie not that many years ago called Buried. There was a fairly recent film called Oxygen, which deals almost entirely with somebody enclosed and alone in a sort of a solitary confinement, tin can-like space. And this is one of those films. And it sets up challenges for filmmakers. And I think, you know, resourceful filmmakers sometimes like to take on that sort of challenge and see how much cinematic interest they can create in such a minimalist sort of a situation. And Tin Can is very much that kind of movie. So eventually other characters do enter the story, although mostly we just barely see them. We have flashbacks to Fret's life in the outside world, working in the institute and so forth, and those are very different. They're very sort of spacious, and there's a lot of room, and people move about into different kinds of areas. So it's sort of a visual relief from the tin can that dominates most of the film. The main thing about Tin Can, well, two things I have to say about it. First, the narrative is kind of murky. Sometimes it really is hard to figure out just exactly what has happened and just exactly what is happening. You have to really sort of put the pieces together on your own sometimes. And I don't think the movie quite solves it. I think there are times when the narrative, the storyline of the movie really is kind of discombobulated and is a little bit challenging to figure out. However, what more than compensates for that and makes Tin Can, in my opinion, a really, really solid and very good and beautifully made film is its cinematic values, that is, its sights and its sounds. It is visually and for the ear as well, a really powerful and imaginative and inventive movie that really takes over your imagination in harrowing ways, but very interesting ways. So cinematically speaking, audio visually speaking, Tin Can is a terrific movie. As a story, I think it's not quite so terrific. If you do choose to see it, remember it has a lot of body horror in it, a lot of nasty things happen along the way. But I found it, as science fiction horror movies go, a beautifully made one that is really one of the better movies I've seen so far this year, even though the storyline, again, is a bit murky and sometimes a bit hard to come to terms with. Now let us turn to our third movie today, Jill, which is, as promised at the beginning, very, very different. He Dreams of Giants, and this is a documentary, and it is about the very fascinating filmmaker Terry Gilliam. And this is the third documentary about Terry Gilliam made by Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe, a team who make documentaries. The first one was many, many years ago. It's called The Hamster Factor, and it was about the making of Terry Gilliam's movie 12 Monkeys. Then, a while back, in the early 2000s, they set out to make a making-of documentary about Terry Gilliam's dream project, which is based on Don Quixote, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote is what it's called. And it was a dream project that Terry Gilliam had worked on and planned for many, many years. And he finally got to start making the thing. And the team of Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe set out to make a documentary about the making of this movie based on Don Quixote. The thing is that the production fell apart. The movie never got made, at least not back then. And so the team of Fulton and Pepe turned their making of documentary into a documentary about this failed production. And it's a fascinating movie. I used to know Terry Gilliam years ago. We got along very nicely. He's a good guy. I spoke with him many times. He came to my apartment once. A wonderful fellow for whom I have a lot of affection. As a filmmaker, he's very uneven. I think he's made one absolute masterpiece, and that's his movie Brazil. And anybody who has not seen Brazil should rush out and see it, because it is a superb movie in every possible respect, one of the great science fiction movies of all time and one of the great movies of the modern era. So he's a great filmmaker. A lot of his other movies are very disappointing. They don't really add up to much, or they're very uneven or lumpy, or just don't quite come off the way he hoped they would. In any case, this documentary back from the early 2000s about, it was just called Lost in La Mancha, about this failed production, is a really quite a marvelous documentary. And one of the things that's marvelous about it is that Terry really is very brave in allowing all the details of this failed production and all the reasons why it fell apart just sort of to come to light. He presents himself as a hardworking filmmaker who is involved with the hands-on aspects of the trade. There's nothing glamorous about the movie at all. And we see all the reasons why that production failed. Every reason, from jet planes flying overhead when you're making a movie about Don Quixote, to the fact that the person playing Don Quixote suddenly became sick and couldn't sit on a horse anymore. So the whole thing fell apart. Well, eventually it came back together again. And eventually Terry Gilliam got once again to go to work on this dream project, The Man Who Killed Don Quixote. And this time it was finished. And eventually opened. It opened back in 2019. And this is what the new movie, the new documentary, He Dreams of Giants, is all about. It's about Terry Gilliam's dream project going back into production with a modest budget, not nearly enough really to get the movie made properly, with a cast that kept changing and changing and changing before the cameras actually rolled. Eventually it got to work. It went under the cameras, and it got finally made and completed. And that is what this new movie, He Dreams of Giants, is about. Now, one thing that's interesting here, well, many things interesting. When you watch a movie, it's just there on the screen, and you sit there and you let it unfold before you, and it's just very effortless process, and we live in a world of fantasy. Making a movie, and I think everybody kind of knows this, but making a movie is hard, hands-on labor for all concerned. And that is what He Dreams of Giants really focuses on. You see, moment by moment, what hard, hands-on labor this is. For Terry Gilliam, for the cast, which finally ended up including Adam Driver and Jonathan Pryce, and for all the people involved. So that you get a marvelous picture of that from He Dreams of Giants. But mainly, the making of the final successful making of The Man Who Killed Don Quixote was just, again, plagued with every kind of bad luck that you can imagine. Things went wrong, more things went wrong, other things went wrong. And Terry Gilliam more than once lost heart and felt this is a doomed project that was never meant to be made. It will never be completed. And that is what we see in He Dreams of Giants. We see the day by day, week by week, month by month, working on getting this project together, on finally getting the cameras rolling. You're there in this location in the middle of nowhere, and you've got all kinds of challenges, and this doesn't work, and that doesn't work. But eventually, the movie does come together, and again, it did finally get completed. But we get to watch that process, and what we get, again, more than anything else, for me at least, is Terry Gilliam's bravery in showing what was very often his absolute gloom, doom, and despair, feeling this project would never get done, especially in the first half of the documentary. There are just these close-ups and these views of his face, and he looks so miserable and so unhappy and so full of absolute despair about this project. And oh, we hear a whole lot of very, very vulgar language as he vents his wrath and his anxiety over this project. Eventually, the movie got made, and the very last thing in the documentary is when it premiered, it's the closing night at the Cannes Film Festival. It got a long, long standing ovation, as did Terry. I have to say, ending my own little comment on this movie, is that I think that standing ovation at Cannes was more for Terry than it was for the movie, which I don't think really quite works, I hate to say. But this documentary about the making of it is absolutely fascinating. So anybody interested in movies in general, in fantasy in general, in Terry Gilliam in general, should rush out and see He Dreams of Giants. It's a really fascinating documentary about the very hard, hard work of making a movie, even when you are a dedicated filmmaker like Terry Gilliam. And that is my pretty darn varied story this week, Jill.
Very varied. Thank you, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films I Love My Dad, Tin Can, and He Dreams of Giants.